there, sex fans. Welcome back. Today is Wednesday, September 8th, 2010, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge.
You don't look like an FBI agent to me.
Well, that's a good thing, because I'm not an FBI agent. I am your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. The Sex Wisdom podcast series returns today with a bang. I have a remarkable guest on hand to speak to us about a wealth of topics, not least of which is his 20-plus year career in porn. This podcast series, as you recall, brings us conversations with movers and shakers in the field of human sexuality, researchers, educators, clinicians, pundits, and philosophers, all who are making news and reshaping how we look at our sexual selves.
Stop by shutting up. I know you all have 2 minutes and already I don't like you.
Someone's really crabby and needs a nap. Listen, if you know anything about pornography in general, and fetish porn in particular, you will immediately recognize the name Luke Wilder. He is a pioneer, a trendsetter, founder of the Fallen Angel brand, a performer, director, and producer, the consummate male dominant, and all-around wonderful guy. I have to warn you, though, today's show is exceptionally long. It's just that when Luke and I get talking, there's no stopping us. So kick back, put your feet up, and settle in for an absorbing conversation that will provide you a unique historical perspective on the modern adult entertainment industry.
Fuck with me once, and I'm going to break your neck.
You're such a tough guy. Luke invites you to visit him on his site, lukewilder.com, and look for all of his movies on fallenangel.tv. Today's podcast sponsor is the fabulous Papaya Toys. You know, I've been involved in all sorts of cutting-edge sex education and sexual enrichment projects over the last 30 years. That's why I was so delighted when the makers of Papaya Toys invited me to assist them in designing, developing, and promoting their superior quality toys that are taking the adult products market by storm. You can have the utmost confidence that all the wonderful, fun, and playful Papaya Toys are made of the highest quality materials. That's 100% medical grade silicon, to be precise. They are German engineered to bring you maximum pleasure, and they will help arouse in you your full sexual potential. Papaya Toys are perfect companions for your private intimate moments, or you can share them with a partner. Either way, you will rediscover passion and have a whole lot of fun doing so. Look for their dazzling banner in the sidebar of my site, drdicksexadvice.com. Okay, on with the show. Luke Wilder, holy cow, thanks for dropping by drdicksexadvice.com.
Hey, thanks for the invitation. It's an honor to be here.
Oh, yeah? Well, yeah. I'm such a big fan, and you're such a big, fat legend. I am completely stoked to have you on my show. I know that you're an extraordinary busy guy with all the interesting things that you're doing, so that makes it all the more gratifying to have you here today.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Would you like to say hello to the nice people?
The nice people. I'll say hello to everybody out there. The nasty people, the nice people.
The pervy people.
The kinky people, and even the straight vanilla people.
Okay.
Hello, everybody.
Thanks.
Luke Wilder.
So the trouble with interviewing someone like you is knowing where to start the conversation. You've been a pioneer in so many aspects of the popular culture that finding a starting point is daunting. In a situation like this, I generally turn to my interviewee's website to see what he or she has to say about themselves. And so I moseyed on over to lukewilder.com and discovered a wealth of information. You write about yourself.
I do.
I began making underground fetish films in the late 1980s. My first public release was titled Backlash, which led to a booming career in the fetish scene in New York City. my name, Master Luke Wilder, soon became synonymous with authentic quality fetish, and my image appeared on scores of video box covers.
The truth.
Is what I mean about being a pioneer. Can you tell us a little bit about the early days? And how old were you in the late 80s? Must have been like 12 or 13.
No, I'm actually older than you may think. I never did any performing before I was 18 years old.
Got it. Tell us about the early days then.
You know, I love Bill Cosby. He had an album out once, and it was entitled "I Started Off as a Child."
Yeah.
And it's a perfect place to begin. I was a young kid. I was a doctor's son growing up in Hudson County, New Jersey.
Wow.
Which is right across the river from Manhattan, mm-hmm. in between the GW Bridge and the Lincoln Tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
So when we were hanging in the park, we were looking out over the Palisades down onto the New York City skyline.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such an amazing time. I was born in 1958. By the time I was a teenager, we had finished the Vietnam War. We were allowed to drink and vote at 18 years old. There was no draft. It was 1976 when I graduated high school.
Mm.
So the whole world, including, you know, the sex world, was kind of blossoming around us.
So
you know, America was celebrating its bicentennial celebration, and there was great hope. We were pulling out of a recession and out of a war. And New York City and Times Square was an absolute mecca for sexual excitement, mm-hmm. and deviance, mm-hmm. and the underworld. And there were sex clubs like Show World and Plato's Retreat and the Zoo, and SM clubs like The Vault and the Hellfire Club, on and on. And Manhattan was wide open. And, you know, we still shot some video out in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, they're almost probably 95% of all the porn that's shot is actually shot in, you know, the San Fernando Valley in California, where I have my offices.
Uh-huh.
But in those days, there was a big production boom in New York, particularly in the fetish
mm-hmm.
arena.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a good-looking guy. I worked out a lot. I had a beautiful wife. We were into fetish. And we really made the scene back then. You know, mm-hmm. we did the dress thing, so when we went out on the town, we were all wearing, you know, heavy leather and
right.
chains and studs. And, God, we were able to park on the sidewalk in front of the Hellfire Club. We were so well known, you know.
Uh-huh.
Like, we would drive up and people would say, "Oh, Luke, your car will be all right there. Just leave it there. Bring the girls in. Bring the girls in." So we developed a reputation. And because I was a good-looking guy, and there was a budding market at that time for male domination over mm-hmm. female submissives, they put me on a box cover of a mm-hmm. fetish video.
Mm-hmm.
And the image apparently sold a lot of video for them, so they
yeah.
started putting me on more box covers.
Right.
And before you know it, I'm on like 150 different fetish box covers.
Right.
And I'm getting paid more money than any of the females that we brought in from Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
I had all kinds of equipment and skills and abilities and tricks that we would pull to make, you know, our SM look really severe and
mm-hmm.
authentic. And we were having a blast, man. New York was wide open. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the conservative wave and regime began to take over
right.
in New York, and, you know, guys like Rudy Giuliani came in and brought Disney along with them,
mm-hmm.
and the entire landscape of Manhattan changed.
Right.
In many ways, for the better, I have to admit. You know, in 1976, they couldn't sell advertising space in Times Square.
No,
nobody
you can
would
barely
buy it. I mean, you could barely walk through Times Square without being accosted by a hooker, a pimp, or a drug dealer.
Mm-hmm.
incidentally, now the drug dealers have taken over on 42nd Street, 8th Avenue. It's CVS. That's what you find now on the corner of 8th Avenue and 42nd Street. People sang songs about the hookers on 42nd Street. Now they're all gone.
So porn has fundamentally changed from what it was then to what it is now. Are you ever nostalgic for the good old days?
Absolutely. I loved the darker side of life. I loved going into the worst, sleaziest strip club, you know, like that was just, it was fun for me because, you know, at home, well, Dad was an orthopedic surgeon. Downstairs in the basement of our home was his doctor's office. It was such a sterile environment, you know. But when I got out into the streets and into Manhattan and into the sex clubs, there was a certain authenticity that you found with the grit and the sweat. You know, let's also face it, another thing that really impacted my life and our society and sexuality in general is, you know, the onslaught of the HIV epidemic.
Right. And I was on the other coast. I was in San Francisco at the time, and I'm 8 years older than you, and I was actually doing high school ministry. I was a Catholic priest at the time and doing high school ministry. In fact, you could have been one of my high school students, don't you know, if you were in San Francisco.
You know my background, right?
Yes,
I lived with Benedictine monks from seventh grade through senior in high school.
No kidding.
Yeah, I lived in an all-boys Catholic boarding school. It was the sister school to Princeton University. Mm-hmm. Like, half the kids from my graduating class went on to Princeton, but I went up to Boston University. I was looking for the party.
And those Jesuits, don't you know? I love it. I absolutely love it. So you go on to say about yourself, I have directed, produced, and performed for some of the top adult film companies, including Fallen Angel, Playboy TV, Larry Flint's Hustler Video, Adam and Eve, and Sin City. Do you actually know how many movies you have under your belt, so to speak?
Boy, it's listed on the website, but you know,
You know, I scrolled and scrolled and scrolled for days. Like, I'm still scrolling, I think. How is that possible, sir?
It's a lot. It's a lot. My career spans over 20 years. And I performed.
And there was never a dull moment.
No. Well, here's another thing to know about me. When I was 20 years old, I began having children.
Oh.
So today I am actually a grandfather of three.
Holy cow.
So my life was always very goal-oriented with mouths to feed. You know, I always had to be very responsible. So when I was in the adult arena making movies, I made a lot of them because I needed to feed a lot of people.
Right. So that's one of the questions that I want to get to in a bit, because you know that was I did not know too much about your private life, and I want to address that in terms of, you know, being a parent and being an adult star and stuff like that, and you know the difficulties that might include. Are you currently performing and or directing or producing? And did you ever or are you now directing yourself?
Yes, 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 and yes.
All righty then.
So I am still directing. I'm not really performing naked, like in sex play, like I was before, but I still engage in an occasional SM B&D flick, and I am scheduled to perform and direct a scene with Ashley Renee and another male dom this coming Monday.
Wow!
So yes, I have, you know, continued my career. Certainly not with the forever that I once did, but
but then again, who could? Oy, oy, oy.
Yeah, I don't have that energy anymore. And you know, I just don't have the energy.
What a nice way of putting it, sir.
at one point in my life, I mean, I was traveling all over the country on a weekly basis, appearing here and there, always, you know, trying to get the next outfit for the next appearance.
Yes.
And throughout my entire career, everything that I have shot, I have maintained rights over and carefully archived all that material. And as a fellow
so
producer,
important, is it not?
You'll understand the value of
yes,
that.
So absolutely. It's history.
Know, yeah. Even the analog material that I shot early in my career, about 10 years ago when digital video first started being developed, I transposed everything from analog over to digital.
Mm-hmm.
So the and it's been kept in a film and tape archive storage facility.
Wow.
So my material's right next to Lucille Ball's. Really, it is.
We great.
Keep our stuff in the same place.
Cool. And it's so important, as you alluded to. I mean, as a pornographer myself, I mean, I have a historical record of all the stuff and all of the people that I've worked with, and it's an amazing thing that it captures something of an era, and it ought to be preserved. It seems to me.
Well, you bring up an interesting point. I have a blog on lukewilder.com.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were to type in wildertimes.com, it would also bring you to the same blog.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I own that URL and I point it to Luke Wilder.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been approached by several of my friends who are sex bloggers in Manhattan to use Wilder Times as an archive,
mm-hmm.
not just for erotica, but for music and culture and
wow.
art and
cool
photography
beans.
And things like that, just yeah. to remind, God, the young kids who are growing up who ask guys our age, like, what's a record?
I know.
You know, they'll be, you know, so lost when they try to go out into the world and find deviant sex.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I think deviance is really, really like a necessary part of our world.
Oh, absolutely.
It helps in evolution and changing people's attitudes.
Because
you
it's
know?
Cutting edge.
Well, not only is it cutting edge, but it's part of the evolutionary process.
Mm-hmm.
And when you cut out deviance from a society, then you cut out like the creativity and
right.
the artfulness
right.
and the beauty and the spark.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I have a friend, a very dear friend, who's been a college professor. He's a psych professor for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he believes that the young college students that he's teaching today are more conservative than any that he's ever taught in the past.
I sense that as well.
You know, and we're a generation.
They're also completely uninformed about sexuality and their own bodies. They seem to be alienated more so from their bodies than folks are from our generation.
Well, we have no one to blame but ourselves.
I guess so.
Because we've had a lifetime to try to change things and yeah. teach the young people of this world about sex and mm-hmm. the positive benefits of it. You know, a point I like to bring up is that it was less than 50 years ago that the AMA, the American Medical Association, and the Boy Scouts of America handbook both touted masturbation as harmful, mm-hmm. as being harmful mm-hmm. to your health.
I know.
So, I mean, that's the legacy that we're working against.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for example, with my children, I began to have children at 20 years old and didn't launch my adult career until, you know, several years later. So I had a predicament right away. I had children who were of speaking age who wanted answers about what daddy is doing and,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, mm-hmm. how do you go into career day? And with your I did, though.
Uh-huh.
I actually did, you know.
And
I went
rightfully so.
I left a few things out. Let's put that. But I went in and I talked about being a photographer and an agent and, you know, the things a girl would have to do in order to want to be a model and to develop a portfolio.
Right.
Kids loved it.
Yeah.
But my point was that I had children that I always was honest with.
Yeah.
So other people have asked me, well, how did you tell your children what you did for a living?
Mm-hmm.
There was never a moment of revelation where I revealed something to them that they didn't know. They just always knew. I was always honest with my children.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like not talking baby talk to your kids.
Right.
So we talked healthy about sexuality, and we brought it out into the open, and we kept condoms in the bathroom, which we didn't count, you know, things along that line.
Mm-hmm.
So my kids have grown up with a fairly holistic, you know, wholesome view of sexuality, but
and they're the better for it, I'm assuming. Yes?
I do, I believe so. I certainly
good.
But there are so many people out there who believe that sexuality and sex in itself somehow is harmful to children.
Right. And it's a corrupting influence for,
well,
you know,
due
to
ethical guidelines, we can't really prove or disprove this because we can't test underage children for the impact of sex on them. We would be violating psychological ethical guidelines.
However, you can see the impact, and that was one of the comments I was going to make just a moment ago when you were talking about you know, the current generation, the younger generation that is just coming of age, and they're awash in, you know, sexually explicit materials. I mean, because it's everywhere on the internet, and they are internet children, internet kids, you know, internet generation, and yet they are seemingly unversed about, you know, the aspects of human sexuality in terms of their own life, and it seems odd to me that they could be so filled or in the presence of so much information and it doesn't seem to stick.
Well, you know, you need the physical connection with people as well.
Yes.
I think that's really an important part of learning about sex is, you know, like remaining in the real world, and it's important that children, young people, not children, but young people that are watching erotica, that they maintain a perspective on the difference between the fantasy that's created on film and the reality of the world.
Right.
And perhaps they're too embedded and exposed to the fantasy and less, you know, grounded in the reality of lovemaking and you know, being with another person and the feel of flesh on flesh instead of eroticizing it.
Right.
I mean, you know, with the video I shot, I was very focused on reality-based porn. I was very focused on the couples. I shot, my first series was called Dirty Dancers, and we flew all over the country. My ex-wife at that time, her name was Ariana, was a stripper, and girls wanted to get into adult videos. We would come into the club. They knew us. We knew them. We shot them while we were traveling, and we shot all kinds of people having sex on camera for the first time, and some of them really just enjoyed it and, you know, like had a great time, and other people struggled. And we tried to find ways to help them struggle through the process. And you learn a great deal about people over the years doing that kind of stuff.
This is there's a name for that genre, is there not?
Well, they call it gonzo. Is that the one you're thinking of?
Yeah.
And gonzo is a loose term applied originally to any kind of a video that broke through the walls and allowed the videographer to interview the talent.
So something beyond what was going on in a a staged kind of thing, right?
Right, exactly. Reality. It's really the roots of reality TV.
And you did a lot of that. You did Adult Stars at Home, Amateur Angels, Sex Across America, The Master's Choice series.
Yes.
Yeah, and go on and on.
We got really efficient at it, the travelogue type of show was really, you know, epitomized with Sex Across America, where we would go to different cities and we would bring, like, I don't know, a group of stars with us, maybe 10 people, and we would, you know, find whatever local flavor we could, and we would shoot sex scenes in like cigar bars in New Orleans or pool halls in Seattle, you know, and really got really into the flavor of the city. And we would always, you know, visit whatever landmarks there were. Like when we were up in Seattle, we got shots of the girls in front of the Space Needle.
Giant penis. Yeah. Well, we did the same thing with Daddy-O Productions, too. I was always on location kind of shooting. It was so much more fun than, you know, shooting in a on a stage or a sound stage or in a setting where, you know, everything was controlled in terms of lighting and sound and all that kind of stuff. It just, you know, I like
contrived.
Yes, pretty much so.
Yeah.
Right.
It's the difference between what I was shooting and you know, staged theatrical productions.
Yes, right.
What they do is contrived, and what I was shooting was reality.
Yeah. And it's more authentic human sexuality, human sexual response than, you know, the contrived stuff.
That was the point I was going to make, is that, you know, it was much... It was a much more honest and authentic depiction of the reality of a sexual connection than most of what you see on screen. And we felt good about that. We were modeling healthy, you know, sexual excitement.
I a lot of our movies, the Daddy-O movies, were reviewed by traditional porn reviewers, and they, you know, called us out for not having, you know, X amount of cum shots in 20 minutes and all this kind of stuff. And I said, well, you know, we're not trying to do that kind of stuff. I mean, that I'm trying to show authentic human sexual response, and not everyone has an erection all the time, and, you know, people have different responses. I was more interested in, like, facial expressions and, you know, how a body tenses and stuff like that during, you know, sexual arousal than I was, you know, with an erection. So,
well, it sounds like you and I need to exchange some DVDs after this interview's over.
Which gets me to a question. Most of your stuff, or exclusively your stuff, was all straight stuff?
No, not
really. Oh, interesting. Good.
Well, I shot a lot of girl-girl stuff, which isn't really straight. But no, I did shoot some gay stuff. I didn't perform in any gay shows because it was a time where there was a very, very clear delineation.
Oh, absolutely.
You were either a straight performer or a gay performer, and you couldn't talk to anybody who was one or the other.
Yeah, right.
But
nowadays,
did...
it's gay for pay almost all the way, so to speak, as it were.
Exactly.
So,
but I shot several movies with transsexuals in them.
Ah, interesting.
And I really enjoyed that. I've had some great friends in my life who have been transsexuals, and I'm one of those people who I really hate labels for a number of reasons. One, because I don't like to support insurance and pharmaceutical companies, but also because they create a lot of damage for people. Across the board, you know, the less we use labels, the less prejudice there is in the world.
Right.
And that's how I approached, you know, anyone that I dealt with in the world.
Right.
So if you were a transsexual or a lesbian or a gay man, I really didn't give a shit, because I was doing all my own stuff, and I was kinkier than any of you were. So I had no room to judge anyone.
Yeah.
And just never... And I also didn't like it when people came out and asked me to define who I was.
Yeah.
Okay, I am a male dominant. I tried being a male submissive once, and it did not work. The girl, Portia Lynn, who's actually a world famous mistress and dominatrix, is my good friend, and we made this agreement. We said, we're going to try this and see if it works, because maybe it'll make me a better male dom. Well, I didn't fall into that role at all. Work and whatnot. But in terms of other things, like physically, there's not anything that I've done to my body that I haven't found a way to make it a turn on.
Right.
You know, whether it were an experience,
and that takes some experimentation, and that takes some kind of open-mindedness that a good portion of the population does not have or does not encourage in themselves. Would you not agree?
Absolutely. I've always been an explorer and an adventurer, yeah. including in my sex.
Yeah.
So it's one of the ways where at 52 years old you can still keep it exciting and, you know,
yeah.
and meaningful.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's not all about, you know, a raging hard-on.
No, it's not. And I become more and more aware of that as I grow older.
Yes. I want to get into your work as a surrogate in a bit, but I just want to finish up a couple more questions here about your porn career. Can you tell us a little bit about the My Dad's Dirty Movie series? First of all, I love the title, don't you know?
Do you want the surface story or the inside story?
You can do either or.
Okay, well, the surface story is that my mom really did find this box full of porn films in my dad, the orthopedic surgeon's, you know, office.
Uh-huh.
His last 8 years of life, he had Alzheimer's,
uh-huh.
and it took him quite a while to pass on.
Uh-huh.
So the Alzheimer's, it's kind of like a slow onset.
Mm-hmm.
So when he began to lose his mind, Mom began to come in and take over his
right.
life. So
right.
there she is cleaning out his office desk, mm-hmm. and she finds this, oh, my God, booklets. And I was like, Mom, get them to me right away. They were shot in a time when
right.
shooting porn was illegal.
Absolutely.
So they could not be copywritten.
Mm-hmm.
And coincidentally, I was walking down the street at the 3rd Street Promenade in Santa Monica one day, and a young boy comes up and throws slaps a set of headphones on my ears and says, listen to this. Well, it was the music that you hear on My Dad's Dirty Movies, which is like, I bought the music from the kid
uh-huh.
after he let me listen to it, and we put it down as a soundtrack. And I got a projector noise, and I put it underneath My Dad's Dirty Movies. And when you watch it, you actually have a similar experience to what we all went through when we went to go see the initial loops in
yeah.
the Stag in right. the Stag movies, because
yeah.
none of them had any sound.
Yeah.
And they would lay some music down in the background of, you know, the theater you were in.
Yeah. And that was my introduction, you know, to dirty movies, was precisely that, you know, about those really old grainy kind of things. And it was off-putting and attractive all at the same time. It was fascinating to me. I didn't know how to react. My body certainly was reacting, you know, physically to, you know, the stimulus, but I was thinking, oh, that's really disgusting what they're doing to that poor woman.
I was fresh out of eighth grade when my friends and I got together. One friend had a garage.
Mm-hmm.
Another friend's father worked for customs. So he got these movies that he would confiscate
right.
and bring home. And then another friend had a little projector.
Mm-hmm.
So all of us got together. There must have been, like, there were girls and boys both in the room, and we were watching this porn film. And we all brought a little jar of alcohol from our parents'
uh-huh.
house.
Uh-huh.
And we mixed it all together.
Well,
all of it. We don't know what it was. Mixed it all together, put in Kool-Aid. Got drunk in eighth grade, right,
mm-hmm.
and watched this film, this loop about a woman getting fucked by a hot dog or fucking herself with a hot dog,
mm-hmm.
and then a dog walks in and eats the hot dog
uh-huh.
out of her pussy. That's where it started for me.
And it's been downhill ever since, huh?
Well, you know what? It was permanently imprinted in my mind. I can literally tell you
yes.
where in the garage I was sitting
yes.
when I was watching the film. I mean, it's amazing what a powerful tool erotic media really can be.
Oh, it's so true.
And that's something that I realized early on in my career. You know, we had a very academic meeting one time in Universal Studios in California, or Universal City, California. It was called the World Pornography Conference. Hmm. And we had clinicians, you know, psychologists, sex mm-hmm. therapists, mm-hmm. Professors, educational sex educators,
right.
And we had lawyers, and we had doctors, all coming in and talking about issues and topics that affected us all. Oh, by the way, the porn industry was there too.
Oh, absolutely, sure.
So there was a seminar which I attended along with John Stagliano, who's mm-hmm. Buttman, and Max Hardcore, and a
right.
couple of other people. And the topic was responsible, you know, production mm-hmm. of erotica. And these guys were all talking about their First Amendment rights and their ability to shoot whatever the fuck they wanted to mm-hmm. and their legal right to do that.
Right.
And I brought up points when, and I was on the panel.
Mm-hmm.
I brought up my own points about our ethical responsibilities to the people that are viewing our videos, but also to the people that are selling them.
Yes.
You know, you take a mom and pop shop out in the middle of Arizona, and they're not watching the videos that they're selling to their customers, yet they're the ones who are being prosecuted and put in jail
yeah.
for pornography or obscenity.
Mm-hmm. Because somebody else is pushing the envelope over here and not realizing or not caring, you know, that that's going to have an implication, you know, somewhere down the stream.
Well, that's just the legal and financial implication
yes.
for the store owner. But when you start to consider the ethical responsibility that you have to the world, then, you know, shooting that kind of pornography develops a whole different mentality.
Right. Would that include, at least to your mind, currently, like barebacking kind of stuff?
And by barebacking, you mean without a condom?
Right.
No, because I found a way around that as mm-hmm. well. Fallen Angel is one of the very first companies to go condoms only. When the AIDS scare hit the porn industry, we
right.
said, well, we're going to throw condoms on. We want to use them anyway, so
right.
now we have a real
good
reason to.
Right.
Yeah, and it never really impacted our sales.
Mm-hmm.
But we did have some people that we wanted to shoot that didn't want to work with condoms.
Right.
So we developed a series called Internal Affairs. And Internal Affairs was only real couples having real sex.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole premise was they were cream pies. They were internal pop shots.
Right.
And I won awards for the series, man. It was the funniest thing because all I was trying to do was get around, you know, this thing about using condoms
mm-hmm.
in every scene. So I figured, well, if they're actual couples and they're having sex anyway, who
right.
are we to dictate how they, you know, live their lives?
Mm-hmm.
So we did that. We did barebacking, and I have to tell you that a lot of people really like the cream pie genre. Do you understand what that is?
You can say for our audience, I'm pretty clear
okay.
on the concept.
The man comes inside the woman. It's not like an external pop shot where it goes all over her face or her stomach or her tits. And there, in my Internal Affairs series, there were never any edit
mm-hmm.
cuts.
Mm-hmm.
So you could actually, we would let the camera linger. And after the guy would come inside the girl's pussy, we would focus right in tight on the pussy and watch the cum come out.
Right.
Might sound a little gross or crass, but you know what? It's really sexy at the same time. So, you know, and those, by the way, the shameless plug, those videos are available online as video download to own on fallenangel.tv.
Yes, and that's where I want to go a little bit in that direction. Your biography continues. I am an AVN Hall of Fame erotic film star, owner of the world famous FallenAngels.tv. So Fallen Angel is the production company, and .tv is something else. Yes, I mean it's the Fallen Angel.
Fallen Angel is my brand,
right,
that
got it.
That I market the videos under.
Yes.
Actually, my production company goes by another name, but Fallen Angel was always the name used for marketing the videos.
Oh, I see. Cool, interesting. Good.
So when I was producing, and I produced for them for close to 7 years, I produced a video a month for Adam and Eve.
Uh-huh. That's a lot.
That's a lot. We co-branded everything.
Uh-huh.
So it came out, you know, the logos Adam and Eve and Fallen Angel
right.
appeared right next to one another.
Right.
And that was a huge coup for me.
Yes.
Because suddenly, you know, I'm let's put it this way, I went from a small Fallen Angel, you know, VHS distribution company to having my DVDs distributed by the largest adult distributor in
yes.
the world.
Yes.
With a staff of 350 people behind me.
Yeah.
It was a good move for me. But, you know, DVDs was not really my direction. I always had my eye on the internet.
Right.
I was an early acquisition on the internet. I was here way before .com, back in the old bulletin board days.
Yes. Right.
Back in the days of RAME, which was Recreational Arts Movies Erotica, you know. Have you ever heard of them?
Yes.
Yeah, the oldest database on adult material on the internet is RAME.net.
Hmm. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And those guys were my friends when we first started up. I used to throw parties for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when were you inducted into the Hall of Fame?
Believe it or not, took those fuckers long enough. 2009.
Get out!
Hall of Fame. That's the truth, yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's a good thing that you lasted as long as you did. Otherwise, you would never have seen the day.
Posthumously, right?
And here, well, folks, we have a video clip of the ever-famous, long-dead Luke
yes,
Wilder.
Luke Wilder does. Well, you know what? It was funny for me because I actually launched people's career
mm-hmm.
who I got to see get in the Hall of Fame before
yeah.
I did. And sometimes, you know, it's just a luck of the draw. It's
yeah.
like Susan Lucci, right?
Yes, right, exactly. Oh, my goodness. So is the future of porn, in your mind, direct-to-consumer, download-to-own streaming media as opposed to, you know, DVD?
Absolutely.
I think so, too. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially in a time when we're all focusing on keeping the environment green.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just the delivery mechanism and the development of a DVD leaves a footprint.
Yes.
And, you know, a video download, well, I'm sure we leave some footprint through, you know, running the electrical systems, but considerably less.
Yes.
Your ability to shop online is enhanced by the option to, you know, view a trailer.
Right.
So you can actually see some of the quality that's in the video. You can have them reviewed. It's so much different. When you and I were young, we would walk into an adult bookstore. We would go to the box cover with the prettiest girl or guy that we could find, and we would buy that and bring it home, and nothing that we expected to be inside the video would be there.
Yes.
Not even the person on the box
That's
cover.
Right.
They might make an appearance, but that would be it.
Yeah.
And you would feel ripped off. In fact, any purchase in the adult world when we were younger had a element of them taking advantage of the consumer wrapped up in the sale.
Oh, it's so
we used
true.
To sell VHS tapes for $60, $70, $80.
I know. I remember distinctly.
And as a consumer, I would never walk out of a store feeling, boy, I got a good deal. Now you can log on to, you know, video sites, you can search according to your genre of interest
exactly.
or performer of interest. You can preview a trailer to see if the girl's really in there, And then you can download the video immediately. Yeah. You don't
and
have to
own
go
it,
out
actually.
And own it. And own it. You can replay it as many times as you like. You can burn it to a DVD. And you know, the fun thing for me is I still have all this archived media, mm-hmm. which has never been put out there.
Yeah. I do too. I have a bunch of stuff that no one has ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely amazing. And you know, so, and the thing is that unless you get, if you know how to get it online, and that was the problem for Daddy O Productions, because you know I was never able to connect with you know really good and responsible web-based people to bring our content to the market online as opposed to DVD kinds of stuff. So and if you don't have that, you know you're pretty much out of business. I'm just looking at the time, sir, and we are way over, and I haven't even come to ask you all the exciting stuff about your surrogate work. May I invite you to come back and join us next week?
Very good.
So until next week, Luke, be well, and we will be visiting you in cyberspace.
Thank you very much, Dr. Dick. You have a wonderful day. It's been a pleasure to be here.
See you soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.
What a fantastic show, huh? Well, tune in next week at this time for part two of my interview with Luke Wilder and more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick.
This man is in my custody. I'm taking him back to Los Angeles. There won't be any more problems.
I hope not. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Papaya Toys. At Papaya Toys, being eco-friendly is not just a slogan, it's their business. Every step in the manufacturing and packaging process is scrutinized to see how best they can limit their impact on the environment. How many other sex toy companies can say that? And their zeal for perfection delivers high-quality, fun products at an affordable price. For Papaya Toys, quality means attending to every detail in every aspect of product development. From selecting the highest grade materials to collaborating with progressive manufacturing partners. From superior customer service to consumer education. Be the first one on your block to be a proud owner of a Papaya Toy. Look for their banner right there in the sidebar of DrDickSexAdvice.com.
This is my room, and that's your room. Good night.
Okay, then. Until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.